Blog Talk Radio.
Talking to Bonnie Albers. Today is Astro Day, and we have one of my faves. He is so cool. He is the greatest, the latest, and the most gravitatest. I've got Ron Cole with me. Hi, Ron.
Well, hello, Bonnie, and good day to everyone.
Yes, I want to tell you that I've got people in chat that are saying hello to you, Ron, and that you're just fab, and I love that. So I do want you to know they all appreciate you, and we are just so, every Wednesday, so excited to learn something new about astrology. And I know today you've got a lot to talk about, but let me introduce us. First of all, everybody, again, my name is Bonnie Albers, but I love saying that because you know it's all about me, Aries in the first, not. So I just have to tell you that You can reach me on Facebook. You can do Bonnie Mosenter-Albers, friend me or message me. If you've got something you'd like us to talk about or to go over, I'd love to hear from you. You can also email me at balbers, my last name, B-A-L-B-E-R-S, 714, that's my birthday, at AOL.com. It's also Ron's birthday. So we're kind of lucky, I guess, we don't have the same email. But I do want to tell you, you can get a hold of Ron. He also has an email. It's livingastro, LIVINGASTRO, at AOL.com. So we're both at AOL. Please give him a holler. He does do readings. He does fabulous readings. They're all astrology. He does your chart. He does and maps out for you. And I'll let him talk in just a second because I know I'm taking this up, Ron. But because I know once you start talking, I'm not going to be able to. So I'm just going to tell everybody how fabulous you are and how you rock those readings. And they are not psychic readings. They are astrology chart readings, which maps out your whole from birth to even death. It maps out what you do, who you are, and why. So, Ron, can you tell everybody about what you do?
Yes, I get the individual's place of birth, time of birth, and month, day, and year of birth, and that coordinating information allows me to set up a mapping of the sky conditions at the point that the person was born and took their first breath, and that is called their natal chart, and it is the single most important chart that can ever be done for a person because it is the roadmap for this particular lifetime that they've come into and the grid system and energy pattern that they're working with and evolving with as their soul is experiencing this particular pattern of energy.
I love that. And you know, I don't know when you're going to do mine, but I'm due for an update or
a solar return chart
that I know I've been asking for, so you're going to have to give me a date. But also, Ron does solar return charts. He does compatibility charts. I mean, there isn't anything that Ron hasn't done, can't see, or can't do. So I know we don't get to everything that Ron does on the show, but I kind of try to show you. We do our, you know, he has done like charts, short charts for people so you can hear it. He's also done a husband and a wife and their compatibility. He does children. He'll do anything. Children are short because, you know, they're not always here that long, but there are patterns and purposes for them to be here. So, and Ron is just so good. And I love astrology, and I'm so happy to have him. Ron, what do you think? But before we start, I wanted to say, hey, guys out there, the reason I said you had a strip, Angel 44, is that when we play Hair, you know, in the 60s, at the end when they played this song, they all took their clothes off. So I really wasn't getting fresh. I just wanted to tell you that that's what happens when I hear that song. I just want to strip my clothes off, stand there in my hair, and just laugh because I remember, now I was too young to be in that show, but I remember everybody talking about it. And I remember the album cover for the show Hair. So everyone out there, we have a good time. We love this song. It so suits Ron. I wish you could know him like I do. But just to let you know out there, I did get your messages, and I don't want you to think I was getting fresh out there, guys, because I was just telling you what I think of when I hear that song. So, Ron, just before we get into astrology, because we play that song, what do you think first? Like, my thing is the moon in the seventh house. What gets you about that song?
Well, that's the most famous song that has emerged over time from the show Hair, and it is just beloved everywhere because of the words and the tempo and the beat. Astrologically, there's no meaning to it because the moon is in the seventh house every single day for about 2 hours, and it aligns with Jupiter, or Mars aligns with Jupiter maybe once every 2.5 years. But it's really fun because the song has such an upbeat energy to it, and it's kind of the unofficial anthem of the age of Aquarius, the age that we are all in now.
I love that. So what do you have, Ron, for us today? Because I know you've given me a list, And there were so many neat things that I have no clue what you were talking about that I'm hoping you would teach me.
Well, there are some things I want to share with everyone today that are quite important and hopefully interesting. 43 years ago, I was in my very first year of studying astrology at an astrology college. And in the course of the years that I studied astrology at this institute, the dark moon Lilith was part of the study, and it was part of astrology. And when one would go to astrology conferences, this is a big subject. People would always talk about the dark moon Lilith and put Lilith in people's charts. And to be a moon much smaller than our natal moon and three times further away from the Earth and dark and not reflecting any light. And I would always object to this because I said, how could you possibly put something in a chart that you can't see, you can't map out, and there's no scientific proof it was there? And there are entire books written about this, the Dark Moon Lilith. One of them is called The Dark Moon Lilith by Ivy Goldstein Jacobson, and she is a wonderful writer. Her books are just fabulous, but she wrote an entire book about Lilith. And it was a big factor. Now, in today's world, no one talks about this. Modern-day astrologers have no idea that this was a factor. And the reason why it dropped out of factorship is because of the very thing I said. There was no proof it was ever there. There was no proof that we had a second moon and a dark moon and non-reflective of light and named Lilith. But astrologers, before my time and in the first decade that I was working astrology, were putting this in charts. And in fact, when I would go to conferences, people would angrily stand up and say, well, a chart is not complete without Lilith. And I just kept thinking, why is everyone not thinking that you can't put something in the chart that you have no proof it's there? And if you can't see it, and you have no proof it's there, how could you even map out an ephemeris, which is the listing of planetary placements? How can you map out a Lilith ephemeris as far as to where to find it in the chart? But interestingly enough, as time went on, logic seemed to also fall into place, and people pretty much forgot this. So it's very interesting. If anyone wants to research it, just go into some search engine, Google or whatever search engine you use, and just type in the Dark Moon Lilith, and you'll see all of this stuff coming up about this. And believe me, it was really well believed in, let's say, for a long time. But this is an example of one item that did not stay as part of astrology because it wasn't an accurate item. Now, the next thing I want to talk about is the part of fortune. During the European Middle Ages, the Arabic astrologers in the world were calculating and researching and doing incredible amount of work with the science of astrology. In fact, most of the stars, people wonder, why do the stars have these odd names? Well, those were names given to those bodies of light by Arabic people for the most part, and it was during much of the European Middle Ages. Well, the Arabs were particularly brilliant mathematicians, and they began to find things in the chart that we today call Arabic points. Like there's a point of marriage, there's a point of happiness, there's a point of this, a point of that. Well, the one that seemed to be A, number one, was the part of fortune. And this
are you talking about the wheel of? Is that the wheel
of
fortune?
No, it has nothing to do with that. It's calculated mathematically. What you do is you find out how far the moon is from the sun, and is the moon above the sun or below the sun? In other words, approaching the sun or moving away from it, and you calculate how many degrees and minutes there is between the moon and the sun, and then you go to the ascendant of the chart, the rising sign, and you take that same distance away from the ascendant. So the part of fortune is supposed to be the same distance the moon is from the sun as it occurs in the chart from the ascendant. Well, for years, I would put it in charts. And according to the Arabic astrologers, this was the point when activated, great fortune would come into your life. You would have great winnings or great abundance. or it would indicate whether you would have a financially secure or wealthy life versus a not financially secure life. Well, after time, after decades of using this, I've stopped using it because I don't see it ever working. It's another example of something that was really, now there are astrologers that will argue with me. They'll put it in every single chart and say, again, a chart's not complete without the part of fortune. But there's these odd rules about it. If it falls in the 12th house, it's supposed to be the part of misfortune. If it falls in any of the other houses, it's supposed to be the part of fortune. And what I've come to understand is while the Arabs were brilliant and did some remarkable work, they did not necessarily find points that would work. They may have worked in a few rare cases, but they did not work for the vast majority of people. So the thing in the chart that you sometimes will see calculated or put in by a computer printout or by another astrologer called the part of fortune is supposed to be this point of great financial abundance. And I've seen people win great slot machine winnings or great jackpot winnings, and the part of fortune wasn't even touched in their chart. So it's very interesting. Here's another thing that has kind of fallen more on the wayside today, although this is certainly used more by astrologers today than the dark moon Lilith. But it is interesting to know that this point was one of many, I forgot the number, let's say there's 70 to 80 Arabic points or parts, as we call them, that were calculated. But this is the one that seems to have remained. But again, personally, I don't use it, and I don't find it effective.
Well, Ron,
then there's something else. Yes, go ahead, Bonnie.
What I want to ask you is, because I'm still not done with Lilith, because I happen to love that name. I love Lilith, and she used to be a character on a show. But I don't understand.
Yes, but she also was a part of the Talmud.
Oh, maybe that's why I heard her. But my point is this. How could they have, like, I'm looking, and if they're using Lilith, what do they use, like, what do you say about, what would they say, Lilith is in your third house, or what?
Exactly. You would find it in a house. They would be calculated according to an ephemeris that someone had had for it.
But what did it mean? Was it meaning a dark moon is bad, not great, versus a light moon? I don't understand that.
Yes, it was just that. According to the Talmud, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, this is just by sheer long ago memory, Lilith was supposed to have been the first wife of Adam. And when Eve was created, she was cast aside, and she came back with revengeful, angry energy to try to destroy both Adam and Eve. And many people even claim the serpent in the tree was Lilith morphizing into another type of creature rather than it being Satan.
Okay.
And that she has always been considered the revengeful one, the night monster, the one, like sometimes people in, and this is getting a little off the subject, but they see an image of an old hag that comes over them at night, and when she sits on their body, they become totally paralyzed and can't move. That is supposed to be the Lilith, or the appearance of Lilith. So she is a very monstrous type creature. She's a revengeful, angry being. And the moon was named after her because it has those type of characteristics. It's supposed to be a dark energy, a dark moon, a point of vulnerability for the human being, and a point where they can be vulnerable to challenge, and challenge is being used very generally here, but it was not necessarily a very pleasant experience for involving Lilith. She was not a pleasant being.
Okay, so that if it was placed in your chart, it wouldn't mean good things. It would mean that you need to be cautious. Okay, cool.
And they
All
would
right.
explain why the moon was dark because it didn't reflect light, and just like Lilith was supposed to have an angry, revengeful darkness to her soul, the moon in its dark non-reflectiveness was like the mythological, when I say that, the person who was Lilith in the Talmud and other examples of her being. And you can research this, folks. You can go into the Talmud and find out that according to the story, the first wife of Adam, there was a wife according to this Talmud before Eve, and it was Lilith. But she was cast out of the Garden of Eden and cast out as being his wife for various reasons I don't remember now. And then Eve came into being, but she did everything she could to destroy Eve and the relationship between Adam and Eve.
Okay, well, I just wanted to know because I'm thinking to myself, I love the name, and why isn't Lilith in everybody's chart? But I don't want her in my chart.
It's just a mythological creation. Somebody a long time ago came up with this, perhaps gave a lecture. People said, wow, that's interesting, in astrology lecture, started talking about it, recording it, discussing it, and before you know it, someone created an entire ephemeris finding out where the black moon Lilith is in your chart. People began putting it in charts, and it became a standard part of astrology. It just kind of crept in through the back door. And it went out just as much as it crept in, because I was one of the first people to say, are you all crazy? Why are you doing this? It's like you're doing something that you cannot see, therefore you cannot map, and you don't know it's there. And not one scientist in the world or astronomer would take you seriously if you would talk to them about the dark moon of the Earth. And now particularly with better satellites and better observations, there's never been a discovery of a dark moon associated with the Earth. So that has also blown its factor by modern-day science.
Well, I think that's so fascinating, but you can keep Lilith. I don't want her. So go ahead. What's our next one?
I didn't want her either, and she wasn't very pleasant in my chart. Okay, then there's another term that's gone out. Now, we're not going to only talk about terms that have gone out, but just the first couple here. Combust planets, that's C-O-M-B-U-S-T, combust. And when I was first studying astrology in the college, they would teach us that any planet that was within 5 degrees of the sun in the person's chart was a combust planet. And that was bad, according to them. They would say that the sun's fiery power and energy would burn over or burn out that planet, and it would be somehow weakened or de-energized by having its close proximity to the sun. Now, actually, what we have been discovering in recent decades is just the opposite is true. Anytime the sun is near a planet, those two energies combine very strongly, and you could see the influence of that planet quite clearly in the person's character and manner. Now, I'll give you an example. Let's say the sun is at a certain degree of Pisces, and Neptune is in Pisces, and it's sitting within 5 degrees of the sun. Now, that can happen because Neptune is in Pisces right now. And whenever I would see that, instead of Neptune being combust like we were first taught, meaning it was bad, it means that that person will have tremendous intuitive talent. That person will have a lot of Piscean Neptune qualities about them, such as psychic ability and ability to read. Now, that's not a good example because Pisces, Neptune is in its own sign in Pisces. But let's say Mercury near the sun. Mercury within 5 degrees of the sun. That can happen quite often. That was supposed to be terrible and affect the memory and the intelligence and the communicationary prowess of the individual because that's what Mercury rules, those things. But in fact, I find that people with Mercury near the sun have great oratorical ability. They often have great capacity to teach, to write, to have people sometimes even mesmerized by their words and the information that they teach. In other words, it's just the opposite. It enhances the power of a planet rather than combust it or burns it up. And again, these were old terms used 100, 200 or more years ago in the evolution of astrology that have gone out of usage today. But it's important for people to listen because if you're interested in astrology and you're listening to this show, you're also going to be interested in things about the history of astrology and things that were once factored in charts because you may actually pick up some older writing and you'll hear about the dark moon Lilith or the Arabic parts, one of them being the part of fortune, or combust planets. And you'll say, what in the world is that? Well, now we kind of explained it. And so what was once believed to be bad, combust, is actually just the opposite. Anytime a planet is near the sun, that planetary energy seems to be given a life force or an empowerment, like an injected energy, by being close to the sun, so it doesn't burn out at all.
Well, I love that. And you know what, Ron? I got to tell you, I have one of the, I should say she's a fabulous girl, and she's a fabulous reader, and she's very powerful. She was on the show. She's coming back on next Monday. She's also puts out astrology, and she wants you to do her astrology chart for the next show.
That would be certainly up my interest to do it. If she's interested, I'd be interested.
Yeah. So, and then maybe, you know, it's she is so excited because she knows your expertise, and she's so rocking. Listen to you. So next
week.
Well,
I hope she is listening today, so she could hear some of these terms and points.
I would bet she is, and if she doesn't, she listens to the archives with you. So I'm going to have her send you all of her birth information, and you then can do her next Wednesday.
That would be fine. Be very happy, as long as the time is provided. I have to have the time. That's the one factor that many people don't know. I have to have the city, or if it's not a city, wherever the location is, if it's rural, just the location, or the closest city, the birth date, month, day, and year, and the time.
Well, that's fabulous. I just had to stick that in because I know she'll be listening, and I did tell her that I would pick her up, but it will be next Wednesday or even, you know, when you can do it, because I know we have a lot to talk about. So go ahead and continue, because
when I first was studying astrology, the next point was not even brought in as a major factor, but it's evolved to become. Now, this is the opposite. This has become more and more and more accepted and more used, and that is using various asteroids in the chart. There is a belt of asteroids or small fragmented bodies. They're like little fragmented rocks, and some of them are large rocks. Some of them are even like a small planet. The one Ceres is quite big. It's the biggest one of all. And it exists in an orbital range between Mars and Jupiter. And these asteroids all in mass are orbiting around the sun in that particular ring. Well, in astrology, four asteroids, which are named by science, and this is not names created by astrologers, are actually used in people's charts. And they've been doing this now since the 1970s. And actually, it's become more and more accepted and more interesting. Now, the largest asteroid of all is Ceres, and Ceres is actually considered by astronomers now as a Plutoid planet. That's a term that they give to small planets, named after Pluto, which is a small planet, and they call Ceres a Plutoid, the largest of all asteroids. This one was named after Ceres, the Earth Mother, the Earth Goddess, the goddess of the seasons, and the goddess of cereals and cereal grains. In fact, we get the word cereal from Ceres, and it's spelled C-E-R, I believe, E-S. And she indicates things associated with natural cycles and energy cycles, particularly cycles of the Earth and the environment. And then another asteroid used is Juno, J-U-N-O, and she was the wife of Jupiter. So, in essence, she was the queen of the gods, since he was the king of the gods.
Wow.
And she is associated a lot with female power, female royalty, and on the negative side, she can be associated with vanity. She can be associated with ego, but she's also the wife. If you or anyone studies mythology, Juno, you have to feel sorry for her because Jupiter was having affairs all the time with Earth people and other beings, and she was, as they used the term in the Middle Ages, she was cuckold, which means that, named after the cuckoo bird, who would often do things like that. So she was often the angry, revengeful wife because of the things her husband did for her, against her. Now, a third asteroid is Pallas, P-A-L-L-A-S, and that's the Roman equivalent of Athena. And Athens was named after Athena, and she was the goddess of wisdom. She would often have an owl with her, an owl on her finger perched or on her shoulder. That's why we get the term the wise old owl associated with wisdom. Even Athena, the goddess of wisdom, would have the owl as her identity. But her Roman name was Pallas, and the asteroid Pallas indicates where you can have brilliant intelligence, where you can have particularly creative smarts, if we have to use that term, where you can have great deep insight into things. So these asteroids, oh, and there's one more, excuse me, Vesta, V-E-S-T-A. This asteroid was named in honor of the Vestal Virgins. And what the Vestal Virgins were, they were virginal women who would keep the fires burning in the temples. They would not let the fire ever go out. There would always be a perpetual burning fire in front of the statue of whoever the temple was made in honor of, and the Vestal Virgins maintained the temples.
That's so funny.
So their term is duty boundness. Vesta is where you're duty bound to something, where you have a responsibility and you are to do it, and you cannot get around it. You can't just back off and say, I don't want to do it today. The Vestal Virgins, according to some legends, would be killed if they did not keep the fires constantly burning. It was their total duty boundness in life to do that. And so Vesta is where we're duty bound. Now, these are only four asteroids, but they are used in astrology, and they actually have symbols. And more people think that the asteroids are connected to the sign of Virgo, first because Virgo is the maiden of the harvest, and Ceres is the goddess of cereals and the harvest of cereal, and Vesta is duty boundedness, and there's
that's
got to
be Capricorn. Capricorn.
Well, Capricorn is Saturn. There's definitely a Saturn energy with that. But I see what you mean, because there's a work duty with Vesta.
Yeah.
But this is more the Virgo work duty, like paying attention, keeping yourself alert, being thorough. This is not proven that they're ruling Virgo, but there's more astrologers who seem to see the asteroids associated with the Virgoian type of energy. So while there are many, many other asteroids, these are the bigger ones, and these are the ones that have been named, and these are the ones that have been put into charts. And these ephemerises or listings of points are correct. They actually have calculated actually directly where the asteroids would be. Now, remember, scientists have given the honor of the name Plutoid planetary body to Ceres because it is so large. It is the biggest of all asteroids, and it is so large, it actually is given the honor of being called a small planet.
Wow. You know, and so they're in everybody's chart, right? So if you looked at my chart, you'd see where, like, the Pallas is and Ceres is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's too cool.
And the only way you can do it, unless you have a book which is specially made to have them in there, and that's kind of rare, you have to order that, you just have to go into a computer and have the computer find them and place them in the birth chart, because computers have everything stored in them today, and they set up charts with great speed and accuracy, and you could just request the asteroids to be put in, and bing, they're all in there. The four are in there.
Oh, that is so neat. I love that.
See? So it's very interesting to see them, and I have experimented with them, and they do work. There is some connection with these placements, and I've gone to entire lectures devoted only to talking about the asteroids, and I've gone to hear some very brilliant people in the past. Zipporah Dobbins, that's a very interesting name. She would nickname herself Zip Dobbins, and she was one of the most famous astrologers, and she had a lot of discussions, talks, and writings about the asteroids. And she was a Virgo, so she believed there was a personal connection between herself and these small planetoid bodies.
I love that. And don't we have something coming up, Ron? Is it the new moon? Is it new moon, or did we pass the new moon? Do we have the new moon yet?
We've got a new moon coming up. We just had that big, powerful, close to the Earth full moon. I don't know what everyone else was like, but I couldn't sleep for 3 nights. That
I
full moon
either.
Interrupted my sleeping.
Oh, my
it was
goodness. It was tough.
Rough.
Yeah, and we're, you know, I think because we're, I mean, this is what I'm telling an astrologist, but we're Cancer. So it was a Capricorn
yes.
supermoon? And so that
the
to me
supermoon,
was
the worst sign for the moon to be in, Capricorn. The most challenging sign and the closest to the Earth yet. So it was a rough one. But the next thing we have for lunar patterns is July 26, which isn't far away, and that's the new moon. The sun and moon are coming together at 3 degrees Leo, 52 minutes. So this is the Leo new moon, the time when both sun and moon are journeying through Leo. And let me do one quick thing to check today. The sun is still in Gemini. All right, and I was going to see how close is it to Leo. It won't be too long till the moon is in Gemini. Did I say the sun? Excuse me. The moon is in Gemini, and it won't be too long till the moon gets into Cancer. And then on the 26th is when we have the actual new moon, when the sun and moon will be joining together in Leo.
Well, the moon in Cancer what rules Cancer is, or Cancer.
Yes,
rules
the moon's going to be very strong very soon here. It's going to be in Cancer in a matter of hours. And,
well, do you think we're
going to
have
the best place for it?
Oh, good, because I mean, I think I was even sick. I think I had headaches, and I didn't even ever have headaches. So I mean, I'm like, and then you know what was? I told my husband because he was fishing. Right at this is not the full moon. Okay, now he was Aquarius with a Capricorn moon. The fish were biting. We got to the beach house 4 days before, and there were so many crabs. Like it's usually been barren, but there was so many crabs and fish. He was fishing right through, and about 4 days after that new supermoon, it started to decrease. So my observation was that super full moon brought all the fish out and all the crabs out because of the Cancer. And then once it started to fade, it was barren again. So do you think that could be possible?
Oh, the full moons definitely stir up animal energies. Absolutely. That's why when I was talking about this, I believe it was two shows ago, primitive ancient people, or let's just say our celestial ancient ancestors, all right, of the cave people era, they were hunters and hunter-gatherers, and these people would hunt during the full moon because they would have the light of the moon lighting up the landscape. Animals were more stirred up, moving about, and abundant. And not only that, they would catch the food during the full moon by the hunting, and they would cook and eat and almost feast during the full moon because they would have more food available right there for them because the hunting proved very successful.
And I think because it was water and he was in the water and the water is, you know, ruled by the moon or by tides.
Right.
I don't like killing, so I don't love when I see crabs in a crab shack nor fish on a line. And we were kept trying to get him to release them, but of course he only takes what he eats. But the thing is that I felt so bad for them because I'm thinking, wow, if the supermoon comes, they need to hide because all the fishermen are out trying to get them.
Oh, the moon stirs forth creatures, and it's much more active for hunting. That's why Diana, the goddess of the moon, is also the goddess of the hunt. You will see the moon goddess always having a bow and arrow with her, and the name Diana is the goddess of the moon. It's the most sign of cancer associated name, but she was also the goddess of the hunt because people would hunt during the full moon and catch more prey, more animals, and therefore have more food to eat. And the moon is connected with eating, cooking, eating. You see,
That's why I've gained
15
pounds.
It's associated with hunt.
That's why, I mean, you know, I'm hoping that Jupiter got out of our sign, Ron, and I'm hoping that going back to the gym will actually make me lose these 10 pounds that I've gained. But it is amazing between the eating, and I wasn't even eating that much. I mean, I guess I was, but, you know, I just expanded my, I gain it right in my bust, but I mean, I might have to change bra sizes if I don't go down.
Well, this new moon is going to be aligned with Jupiter. The new moon is, like I said, 3 degrees of Leo, and Jupiter is at 2 degrees Leo. So Sun, Moon, and Jupiter are all lined up on the 26th. Actually, the Sun makes its exact alignment with Jupiter on the 25th. Now, there's an example of something that was once called Combust. Sun conjunct Jupiter is supposed to be terrible because they're so close together. In fact, that's absolutely wonderful. A person who was born with that will have a very lucky time in their life, or should I say a lucky series of timings in their life rather than combust. But this full moon would be, I think, 3 degrees 52 minutes, and Jupiter is like 2 degrees 18 minutes, 2 degrees 20 minutes. So it's sitting within 1 degree of the full moon. So all three are sitting right there in early Leo.
And what does that mean?
This will be a very joyous, happy, uplifting, good time to travel, good time to, have fun, good time to laugh, good time to just enjoy yourself, good time to unwind type of new moon, because Jupiter always gives those abilities for joyousness and abundance.
I know. Well, I'm looking forward to that, and I'm kind of looking forward to them being in Leo, Jupiter being in Leo and out of my first house and then my second house of money, and I'm hoping that actually sparks something to happen. So
started to lose weight already, and Jupiter just left Leo on Tuesday the 15th, which means it was a week ago plus, and it's been in Leo, and I can see things starting to go in the good direction for me for weight as a result of that change out of Cancer.
I know. Well, I would send it over to here, please, Ron, because I need somebody to take that off me.
It's actually time now that it will go off faster than you realize. Even though it just entered Leo only a week ago, it'll be there a year plus. It won't leave till August 11th, 2015. So we've got a long time that we could slowly and surely lose it, or a time we could lose it quickly. But the time, losing is the negative word. We have we can acquire thinness with this new transit.
That's right. And you know what that means, Ron? We can't go back to that Thai restaurant for a year.
Well, we can, but we have to just eat different food items.
Yes. Ron and
some
I
real
went
hot curry. That would burn off any fat.
Oh, my God. It's just going to be salad for me in the next 6 months unless this just drops off. But what else do you see in the skies for
all right. Oh, okay, I was going to mention something else, but that's actually a very positive full moon. That's a very good energy. However, Jupiter can take things and expand and make them bigger, larger, grander, and that can be for the good, but it also can blow up things for the more challenging. So it can take a small conflict and turn it into a major conflict. It can take something small and blow it up to a huge international thing. So people will say, well, that's not good. How could Jupiter be the best planet of all? Its principle is to increase and make things grow and expand. And while it can increase in joy and happiness, it can be particularly good for money because it's very much a wealth indicator. It can also tend to increase something and make it get out of hand, too. It can make something get more and more expansionary. So while the Sun and Moon and Jupiter aligned as a threesome group tends to be a really good aspect. I tend to suspect a lot of people will have a lot of fun and a lot of good traveling during the time of this, but they need to be careful not to overspend or to overestimate their costs. In other words, get a place or rent a place that's way more expensive than their means will be, so when they end up coming home, they will be shocked to find out how much they spent on their travels. That's one of the problems with Jupiter. You can overspend, you can overdo while you are traveling. You can overgamble. That's a really good time for the casinos.
Yeah.
Places around the world, because people will gamble and gamble and gamble voraciously when there's an alignment with Jupiter.
And how long is that in there for?
Well, it's only going to be about a week, and the actual conjunction between the Sun and Moon is the 25th, the day before the new moon. And so that will take us till about August 2nd. And by that point, the Sun will begin to have separated farther and farther away from Jupiter, so its energy will pretty much be over or weakened to the point that it's very mild then, very mundane.
Okay. Well, I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, but is this going to be a good Leo? Is a good month for everybody, or do you know? I mean, that's kind of general.
Well, it starts out with a bang. Jupiter goes into Leo a few days before the Sun goes into Leo, and Jupiter precedes the Sun. And then the moment the Sun enters Leo, it's aligned up with Jupiter as it is today, as it will be more and more direct until the 25th, and then still stays until the early part of August. So this is actually a good sign because Jupiter and is kind of enhancing Leo's energy. It kind of was there as the sign of Leo started to come into being, and Jupiter was already in that sign. So it kind of greeted the Sun, so to speak, and it made that and is now currently a very positive time.
Well, I am so happy for that because, like I said, I mean, this year, if you think about it, you had a lot of Jupiter, you know, going through our sign. So, but it really didn't get far because, if I'm correct, we were talking about Saturn, and Saturn was in there a lot, making Jupiter non-existent for me, I think. I mean, it did make it, I mean, I had a great time. I always love life, and I really believe that you get out of life what you make it. But there are some aspects, like you said, and some planets that actually hold back some of that energy, and there's all these reasons for it.
Well, we had that terrible T-square, and when I say terrible, I'm not really being over dramatic. It really was one of the roughest configurations in April, in which Jupiter was one of the parts of it. It was a, not a T-square, it was a grand cardinal cross, and there were four points to it. A T-square came later and still is in wide influence now, but just about ready to break up, but a grand cardinal cross. Jupiter was at 13 Cancer, Pluto was at 13 Capricorn, Uranus was at 13 Aries, Mars was at 13 Libra, and they were all at each other's throats, squaring each other, afflicting each other, opposing each other, making it one of the most challenging aspects of all. And people say, oh, well, it's over. That's back in April, early May. We're beyond it now. And I try to explain to people, look, the effects of that cardinal cross is going to go on for perhaps up to 2 years after it's over. Don't assume because we've gone through April and May and June and that's behind us now that it's over, because it's such a tough energy that it created almost like a vortex, a ripple effect, and it will stay still affecting politics and the world and events for a long time to come.
Wow. So it was more global, do you think, than it was personal?
Well, yes. And I even mentioned in my writings, the report that I sent to my students and others, I said Vladimir Putin's son, S-U-N, the sun in his birth chart, was at 13 Libra. So his sun was exactly drawn in to this cardinal cross. It was where Mars was at. Mars was at 13 Libra. So his sun was being squared by Jupiter at 13 degrees Cancer, squared by Pluto at 13 degrees Capricorn, and opposed by Uranus at 13 degrees Aries. And look what's going on with Russia right now in that downed plane. I mean, that happened months after the actual in-the-sky grand cardinal cross went on, but it's still part of that two-year period afterwards that this can affect events and the world. Because it's over in configuration, it doesn't mean that something this intense, this powerful, that astrologers all over the world were talking about for a long time before this April is over, the energy of it will still manifest for a while before it finally wanes out and is overridden by other things.
Wow, I know. I think we are still all being hit by it. But, you know, I don't know. What I don't understand is if it is so powerful and it was a big, heavy hitters in there, what does it, all the other planets and stars and asteroids and everything that are coming out now, like, how, if that's still affecting us, then why are we, like, what do these other things do? Do they help, like, offset it?
Well, they do, like, help offset it. Like, this particular week coming up, or weekend, we've got that new moon, sun and moon in Leo, and sun and moon aligned with Jupiter. Moon conjunct Jupiter, sun conjunct Jupiter, sun and moon conjunct each other. So that's really a very positive thing. That's a very uplifting energy. That's a very fun, enjoyable type of energy. So that's kind of one of these respite aspects, but that's just something that will come and go. It's not going to last forever. We're in this period. We have new moons all the time. We have one new moon each month. So each one will be distinctly different. This one just happens to be aligned with Jupiter.
Wow. And what is our moon in August coming up? What is that? Is that a Leo moon?
No. By the time we get the next new moon, it'll be in Virgo. Because what happens is we've got it so late in the month that the next time we get a new moon, it's going to be August 25th, and it's going to be 2 degrees Virgo at that point. So this is the one and only new moon in Leo.
What about the full moon? I guess that's what I was going to say, because the full moon's early.
This is going to be interesting for your spouse then. The full moon in August, or should I say when the sun is in Leo, is always in Aquarius. And so we're going to have the Aquarius full moon on August 10th.
Yeah, isn't that early for a full moon? I thought it was always in the middle of the month, so I always look for it around the 15th, 17th.
Oh, no, they move about one to two days away from each other every month. And like the one we had in July was July the 12th, and then here we've got the next full moon, August 10th. And beyond that, in September, the next full moon is September 9th. And then after that, this next one will be an eclipse, and that's October 8th. They're always a day or two apart, and they slowly move. They slowly move because the moon takes 27 and a half to 28 days to complete its circuit, which isn't a full month. So when the moon gets back to a point, like where it is exactly right now, it'll be exactly at that point, 27 and a half to 28 days from now. So that's not a full month. So that's why the new moons and the full moons will slowly migrate through the dates of the calendar.
Well, Ron, another thing I wanted to ask you, which I know I'm constantly asking you all kinds of things, is there's three super moons, this being the first one. What do you think in that, what in that arena does that mean? Do you think it means something?
Well, we can say with gratitude the one of the Capricorn full moon is over. We have two more. August 10th is a super moon. It will occur in Aquarius, 18 degrees, 22 minutes. The moon will be at its closest to the Earth when the full moon occurs on August 10th. And it will be, and I hope I get these percentages right, it's 12% bigger and 17% brighter, I believe is the statistics. And then we've got one more, and that's September 9th. At that point, the full moon will be in Pisces, and it'll be at the closest to the Earth, and it'll be at 16 degrees Pisces, 19 minutes. So we're going to get an Aquarius moon coming up in a matter of short while, August 10th, and then right after or near Labor Day, we're going to get the September full moon. And these three full moons happen to occur when the lunar cycle or the lunar transit around the Earth is the closest to the Earth. People don't understand this. The moon actually gets closer to the Earth at some times, and then at other times it's further away from the Earth. And when it's at its furthest point away from the Earth, the moon actually appears smaller, slightly smaller and a little dimmer, because of its distance. But when it's closer to the Earth, it's bigger and brighter. And if we happen to have a full moon when it's close, you get these super full moons that when you look at them after a few moments, it almost hurts your eyes. It's so bright. And the moon goes from its normal size to be 17% bigger and 12% brighter. It is really quite amazing. And you could see it. If you never have seen a super moon, then the next two look at the moon, and you'll be amazed how big it appears. It'll be so much larger and so much brighter than other full moons. And that's because it's closer to us.
Well,
you
know
what that means also, Bonnie? It affects the tides more. It has a stronger effect on bodies of water because it's closer to us and therefore has more of a powerful pull on the tides and water.
Well, that's why I thought the fishing, that's what I'm saying. Like when my husband was fishing, I told him to get out there on these next three full moons because they're all super moons, and I think they're closer to the Earth. So I told him that that's when, if he's going to catch any fish, and I don't want him to bring them home, I just want them to be like in packets, that he can go out, and these three full super moons would be the time. So it'll be really interesting. I just hope he's not back at the beach so he can't catch any crabs. You know, crabs are our symbol, so I hate when he catches them. But they're very good to eat. But I hate when he catches them. So I thought that was really
interesting. Well, I will tell you, we got an Aquarius full moon coming up, and he's an Aquarius, so he needs to go to this next one.
Yes, he is going to, I would imagine. You know, I think I'll be in New York. Right at that, I'm going to New York on the 11th. So I'm just hoping, you know, I'm hoping this is a good full moon and that everything is, you know, is real good to go. So that's what I'm looking for. And I'm glad that I didn't go on the Capricorn moon. So I will be broadcasting live that second week from New York. So I think that's pretty cool, don't you?
Yes, I think it's really wonderful, especially since you can broadcast from locations for this show and have it live and be in any location. This is part of modern-day technology that makes it so efficient for us to do things like that.
I know, and you know, this is not on the subject of astrology, but what I love so much is, you know, when I had started with Blog Talk Radio, I thought, oh, I didn't even ever hear Blog Talk Radio. And then I saw what they have vast amounts of subjects and people on Blog Talk Radio. And I thought, you know, there's something here with all the technology. You know, it used to be AM and FM, and now we have the capability of broadcasting live for ourselves, from ourselves, from different locations, and just like YouTube and podcasts, that you could be anywhere in the world with anybody, and people think you're always in the same studio. Now, you and I happen to live in the same town, but we're not in the same studio, which is so cool, but we could be.
Well, that's where we had to go. I used to travel all over the country and be on live radio talk shows. And every city had live radio talk show hosts. Now, if you have a talk show, it's an international one. It's syndicated by one location, and it's syndicated throughout the whole country. But it used to be individual hosts. And you had to go to the studio, and you had to sit there opposite them with the big headphones on and the microphone in front of you, and that was the way you got on the radio. And, you know, because that was the one and only way things would work back then, but not in today's world.
I know. I think that is so cool. And you know, we're still on summer hours, everyone. So I won't be out of summer hours till probably in September when I get back from New York. So I want to thank everybody for actually being with us. And Ron, I love astrology. And next week you are going to rock. I'll tell you her name because you're going to love this. She is called the heavy metal medium. So can you imagine? Yeah.
What a name.
Yeah, okay. Her name is Melissa, and I love her. She's a soul sister of mine because, you know, I'm the rocker chick. So I would say I'm the rocker chick medium. She's the heavy metal medium. And I actually sang for her, Ron, because her husband has a heavy metal group. And I sang Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And she told me that if they ever come to Orlando, that she's sure that he would want me to sing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star for him wherever his concert was.
I apologize if I don't mean to offend her by laughing. It was just such an unusual combination of words, the heavy metal medium, that it just kind of made me laugh because I wasn't expecting something like that.
I know, and I can't wait, and I'm sure she can't wait for you to actually rock her chart. And it is going to be so interesting because I always love to see people's charts metaphysically and non-metaphysically, that we've had plenty of people. But most of our charts and most of the people that we have listened to, I think we all rock gifts. But everybody is, I think, Ron, intuitive, psychic, sixth sense, or, you know, or love astrology or love past lives, that we're all really connected by metaphysics. We just sometimes don't know it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
we definitely are.
I know. I thank you, Ron. I love you. I will talk to you next week. I thank everybody in chat. I thank all of our callers. And tomorrow, I just want to let you know, tomorrow we have, it is so cool, Ron, I want you to call in. It is Annabelle Miller and Brenda Brand. They are the mom and daughter team. She is a medical intuitive, and her mom rocks tarot, intuitive, mediumship. She even made boards, Ron. Like, you remember the Ouija board? She was like developer of a certain type of board we still use in metaphysics today. So, and they're the perfect team, and I would love you to call in. And then after that, the next hour, we've got Andrew Romine. He's a healer. He's a super guy. He also rocks tarot and does a psychic reading. So please call back tomorrow when you want your reading, because they're really cool. I have great co-hosts. And Ron, it's our birthday month, so call in and get some readings.
Yes, it is our birthday month. And good luck with your reading, because you're getting a birthday reading, I understand, too.
I am getting one from Kelly today, but it won't be on the show. I think Kelly has...
Oh, I thought it was on the show. Okay, I apologize.
Oh, well, it's supposed to be, but I think Kelly's got some issues with her. She's taking care of her new grandbaby that was born on our birthday. So
I remember a birthday on July 14th. That's right.
Yeah, and we have had some technical issues that I'm talking to Blog Talk with, and we're having some today. So I am going to say goodbye and tell everybody that I love them, and I will talk to them tomorrow. And let's hope Blog Talk gets their act together. And if they don't, well, you know what? We'll just keep going. So everybody have a great evening. I love you. I love all of our co-hosts. I love astrology. And Ron, you're the best. Mwah! Have a great day, and thank you.
A pleasure, Bonnie. And goodbye, everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And Heidi's coming over. Did you hear her?